So I myself have been climbing since I was a teenager. I absolutely love to climb. It's a piece of me. My husband has climbed for 8 years. He fell in love with the Wasatch Mountains and then immediately, you know, took a class and learned all of the skills that you need. And of course, there's so many skills. You're learning constantly something new. But yeah, he fell in love with climbing just like I did. We met and our first date was climbing outside, and there was an instant like chemistry just with that. You know, especially when I'm climbing harder, and I've really been pushing myself climbing a lot more because it is a meditation. It clears my head. When you're on a climb, that's all you're thinking about. You take everything out of your mind except for that climb. And it really does help me, bring me closer to him. We just got back from climbing the Dolomites, 4 major peaks, multi-pitch alpine climbing for 12 days straight, you know? We were very seasoned. So July 21st, my husband and 3 of our friends had gone up to Castle Rock on the west face and just to do some easy top ropes. I wanted to teach some people how to rappel. So I picked Slab Happy to teach them how to rappel, and it's a 5'8", 5'9" slab. And my husband had someone belay him on Red Rib. And Red Rib, the description says long, single pitch, beautiful climb. And so right there, I mean, it sounds confusing. And if you don't go any further reading, you just think, okay, this is just one pitch. A 70-meter rope should cover it. So I climbed my climb to the left, and my husband, Dan, climbed his climb, Red Rib, to the right. And I got to the top of my climb, and then I brought up the next climber, and Dan was still climbing his climb, and we heard him say take, and then we saw him fall. He hit his head, and he died instantly.
Welcome to In the Hive, I'm Tim Pierce. According to the American Alpine Club, which is a nonprofit organization that seeks to inform, educate, and engage a community of outdoor climbers, 2018 saw the highest amount of climbing injuries in the United States since 1976. More and more people are finding themselves clambering up mountains, ascending features of solid ice, and summiting perilous peaks. Whether it's rock climbing, ice climbing, or mountaineering, technically traversing mountains and rock has never been more popular than it is now. And Utah serves as a veritable climbing mecca, with an indeterminate amount of climbers shambling over, around, and on top of about 13,000 known climbing routes. And that's not counting the 16 indoor climbing gyms scattered throughout our state, with more to come soon, all with their own towering walls and tricky boulders. Here in Utah, you could probably throw a rock and hit someone who would try to climb it. But we're not even alone. Data published in 2014 by the Outdoor Industry Association, which is the most recent data, shows that there are about 7.7 million climbers in the United States, a 6% increase from the year before. Or, you know, let's look at a different metric here. According to the Climbing Business Journal, which is an independent publication that tracks the indoor climbing industry, last year, 2018, was the most successful year ever for indoor gyms. Over 50 new facilities were opened in the United States alone. So as more people flog to crags, cracks, boulders, and gyms, more people are also getting themselves hurt.
We went out with a big group of friends to a set of climbs called Beer Climbs, which is just north of Anchorage, maybe 15 miles or so.
Kind of start to see that rock pile down there at the bottom. It starts this side of it and goes up to the you know, the little overhang and then go around the top.
We had an activity for my church, and we took them to a couple cliffs that we could climb on that were really easy, like 5.7, 5.8.
So yeah, we went up there, had a group of my friends, my wife, kind of my main climbing partners were out there with me.
And there's no chains or bolts or anything like that. You have to put cams in all the way.
Thought, no problem, they can do a little rappelling and a small climb.
We climbed for a couple hours and another group showed up.
You climb up about 10 feet, stick something in, climb 10 feet, stick something in.
I'm at the top of, there's kind of a two-stage setup on the right-hand climb. I'm sort of hanging out there at this point. We're gonna break stuff down, but I'm letting people kind of get out of the way.
I got all the way up to the top and stuck a cam in just underneath the bulge.
Plan was that he's on one peak of the cliff, and he would have the girls rappel 30 feet down. They would walk across the on the bottom part and then climb up to me.
And all of a sudden I hear a really loud crack, which is never a good sign ice climbing.
Lean back, you yelled at my Blair to take.
One of the girls, she climbed up about 5 feet, couldn't make it, and she fell.
So I looked down. And what I see is someone in a blue jacket tobogganing down this climb.
I must not have done it right. Cam popped. Next one down popped. Next one down popped.
But all I know is that the leader said that she saw her holding onto the rope and not being able to hold onto the rope any longer because she can't hold my weight and let it go.
The person at this point, I don't know who it is landing and catching air off of each one of these and smacking, going down, just sort of spinning.
So I fell from there, about 60 feet down.
I dropped down over the cliff, and I took a free fall, 30 feet down the cliff.
Not really in any pain, not surprising. Adrenaline after a big accident's pretty common. Again, people kind of get up and screw themselves up more running around.
Going over my body to make sure I wasn't damaged, and other than a few scrapes and stuff, I was just fine until I got all the way down to my ankle, and my left ankle was the size of a softball. I had dislocated it, and it had popped back in.
When I hit, it sent me to the side, and the next thing that hit was my face. And because I had my hand behind my back, it just took complete contact and knocked me out. It was like when you take your cell phone and you drop it and it just shatters. So the right side of my face kind of just did that. And I had some six serious breaks where they were deep and my sinus was broken close to the eye there, and it filled up entirely with blood.
Rock climbing is a fundamentally dangerous sport. While not quite as deadly as other extreme sports like whitewater rafting or, you know, even skiing, there's still an inherent risk factor. However, there are mechanisms used to make the sport safer. For example, climbing gear.
These are some of the items that you'll use whilst sport climbing.
There's rope.
Rope bag.
Harnesses.
Quick draws.
Carabiners.
An assisted braking device such as the Gree-Gree. A manual belay device such as the Bug.
That's just to name a few. But it's up to each climber to make sure that all of that gear is functioning as it's intended. Otherwise, the risk of an accident greatly increases. The AAC reports that aside from rock and ice fall, user error makes up the majority of rock climbing accidents. But all that equipment can be part of the problem and can often function as like a menacing barrier of entry. Knowing how to use a plethora of random gear can be really daunting. The AAC shows a pretty even distribution of accidents among newcomers and old-timers. Accidents are commonly caused by either not knowing how to use something if you're new, or becoming complacent in not taking the extra steps or necessary steps to make sure gear is working as it should. And there are a few ways to make sure you're climbing as safe as you can be. Rock climbers way back when, if they wanted to get into the sport, they would often find an experienced person to teach them, or like a mentor. So if you can't sell your cams from your carabiners, or you know, you just need a refresher, then you should seek out someone like Tom Ratty, because he's been rocketing up rocks for
longer than you've been alive.
Tom taught middle school here in Utah for about 21 years. And he's retired now and spends a lot of his time outdoors. When he's out and about, he's probably on a rock. Tom took me out climbing last week, and we were up the Big Cottonwood Canyon at a place called Upper Dogwood. And I wasn't even the only one he took out that day. We went with a whole group. Some folks we went with had never been climbing before. But that's okay, because that's part of Tom's dogma.
It's part of my nature to kind of share my love of the outdoors and this kind of stuff with other people. Like before, they'd think they could never do something like that. And then all of a sudden they can. I see a lot of these people will walk around with their heads a little higher, walk a little taller. And for a lot of them, all they do is sit around and play stupid video games anyway. This gets them out. Okay, 1, 2, 3, fall. Fall.
He takes folks out climbing to show them the ropes and instill the habits of best practice.
Now, if you're coming down, I lower you.
And for Tom, it's important for him, too, to keep up with those habits.
Part of climbing is to double-check everything. This is where if you get complacent, you die. So because I'm going down this, I'm going to make sure that the carabiners are tight, that they're locked, and they're in opposite directions. The gates open opposite, okay?
But still, that inherent risk that comes with climbing can discourage people from participating, because gravity doesn't all of a sudden stop working while you're attached to a rope. And to some newcomers, like one guest on our trip, it's hard to put your faith in bits of fabric and metal.
The rope is really bungier than the last time I went climbing. Finding the truss in my gear, that's hard.
Tom says throughout his long tenure as an avid climber, he's seen giant leaps in technology and watched climbing gear get safer and safer.
5 years ago, you wouldn't have all these people climbing. One of the things that they've done that has increased the number of climbers is they put bolts and everything. It used to be that if you were climbing, you would have to, like he's done, tie on to a bunch of different things so your rope doesn't fall down. But you can see all the silver bolts drilled into the rock, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's like the invention of cams. Before they had cams, it's like, you know, they would take chunks of 2x4 and pound them into cracks, and a piece of angle iron that was, you know, cut at a, you know, funny shape and pound that stuff in. That's what they did way back then, and, you know, I think that's definitely crazy. Nowadays, you just stick a cam in and you're fine.
But one thing we still haven't explored is the sudden spike in the climbing population. Why the boom in climbers now? Well, Tom says that's partly due to ease of access.
It is an extreme sport, and the world's more extreme. It's not hard to learn, and the gear, well, with the advent of gyms, that's what it is. It's plastic.
Like I mentioned a bit earlier, 2018 saw the most successful year for climbing gyms ever. We have 16 here in Utah with more on the way.
I think gyms play a critical role in being that communal meeting place, particularly in the winter. You know, when all of us can't go climb in Little Cottonwood, you know, you'll ski and then come here and get your climb. Or any gym for that matter.
So that's...
My name is Philip Wilson. That's PHILIPWILSON. And I'm the risk manager and assessor for the Front Climbing Club.
And the Front Climbing Club, where Phil works, is one of several indoor gyms in Salt Lake. And I actually just want to give a little bit of a disclaimer here real quick. I am actually a member of the Front, but I am in no way invested into the organization other than paying them probably too much money every month to be not very good at rock climbing. Anyway, so Phil, in his non-expert but longtime observer opinion, says the steady increase in rock climbers over the past years and the rapid growth of indoor climbing gyms is partly due to more exposure, and that rock climbing is now leaving this niche realm it once lived in.
I think that there is a bit of a craze, the Olympics coming up. I think that there is a little more validity to the sport as well. Instagram has a huge, huge role to play in all of this, and advertising as well. If you're constantly scrolling through your feed and you're seeing cool pictures of all your friends or, you know, influencers, climbing, well, might be inclined to do it.
So, and I wanted to talk to the folks at the front specifically because they really try to build this environment or climate of community. In part, it encourages habits that can osmose through the walls of the gym. Because facilitating discourse of safety and consideration, of speaking out when noticing something is wrong, can be used as a tool to keep people safe when they're outside of the gym's closed environment.
Well, this is all about assessing risk and mitigating it, because we'll never make this sport safe. It's inherently dangerous. Bouldering, every fall is a ground fall, lead fall. You know, if your belayer doesn't catch you, he doesn't catch you, you're hitting the ground, right? One of the things that I think that we do to help abate this risk is to ensure that folks are aware of the risks. I mean, we're testing people on doing comprehensive partner checks, for instance, which I think are one of the best ways to mitigate the risk of climbing. Like I said, I mean, if our staff see something, we'll say something. And also, I think that the community does that as well. When people transition that outside, I think it's really valuable. I've been at a dozen walls where something sketchy's been going on, and someone at the crag says something.
So then Phil sees gyms as a sort of climber incubator, not only in learning the technical skills required to scale a piece of rock, but also best practices and safety that can translate.
Well, as I advanced, you know, into outdoor climbing, I started to see the gym more and more as I'm here, so I can do that outside.
Because while indoor climbing gyms are becoming more and more prevalent, so is outdoor climbing. And outdoor climbing differs from gyms in, you know, obvious ways like sun and fresh air, but also because gyms are closed systems. They have staff members walking around, making sure people are following the rules and being as safe as they can be.
Having a testing document with us isn't necessarily, doesn't reflect outside. Like, they're two different worlds, really. Gravity still works in both, but we are in a semi-controlled environment where we are vetting people. We do have staff that are trained to know what to look for.
And Phil says there's a disproportionate balance between newcomers and old-timers that are willing to take people out. So then, it's important for climbing communities to be open and welcoming, but also for experienced people to be able to hear criticism without scoffing or feeling belittled. And this conversation that we're having today really especially matters here in Salt Lake City and in Utah, because we're a hub. There's so much variety in types of climbing and ease of access, it's practically unparalleled.
In Utah specifically, man, it's pretty cool.
Utah. The new frontier for the sport of climbing.
Okay, so I bet there are some of you listening to this right now and are wondering why.
A test of strength and endurance, where pain is just a milestone on a vertical journey to the limits. Where fingers pull and feet dance a bizarre ballet at dizzying heights.
You know, why on earth would someone even put themselves in such a precarious position in the first place? Why even rock climb?
It's incredible. I mean, whether you're in St. George or Moab or the Swell or whatever, that the sandstone we have in this state is great.
So it's been ingrained in me. It's part of who I am. It's a piece of meditation for me.
For me personally, climbing's kind of more about the, like, I really like being on a team and doing stuff with my teammates.
It's, you know, a big giant playground, and I'm 10 minutes away from it.
Well, it definitely brought confidence, like, that I could go forward with something even if I'm scared.
The scale, the wilderness, and the variety.
Gosh, that feeling right there of being totally in step with your partner, just step step pick.
Or the next picnic area around the corner. You literally walk through, set your stuff on the last picnic bench, and climb on the wall right there. He brought stuff for barbecue. Had a barbecue going while we were climbing. Where can you do that?
So I think that we're in the heartland of climbing, really.
It's just that. A great feeling. It's such a high. And for me, it's just power building for me. And it was therapeutic for me to get over what happened, just to keep going and to do it again. And it's something that I love.
Even if you don't agree with any of these people and think, well, they subject themselves to it, serves them right. That doesn't really change the fact that more and more people are climbing and more people are getting hurt. But even still, there's no accurate or comprehensive means of assessing and studying climbing-related injuries. The research has not quite caught up with the population. And you know the statistic that I shared at the beginning of the story? The one that says 2018 has the most injuries since 1976? Well, there's kind of a catch to that. It's a bit bunk. You know, it's junk. It's inaccurate. Even the editor of Accidents in North American Climbing, the publication from the AAC that chronicles climbing accidents, says it's not even a completely representative metric.
It is probably the best that's out there, but we're very clear to say that it's not that robust of data.
So that's Dugald MacDonald, who is the executive editor of the publication. He says that Accidents in North American Climbing is built through folks self-reporting, or the National Park Service's and search and rescue reporting in accidents. So the data pool is limited to people opting in.
Many, many climbing accidents that happen never get reported anywhere because people either aren't that badly hurt or they're able to self-evacuate or whatever other way, you know, sort of get to the hospital if needed on their own, mm-hmm. or they may just go to the doctor on their own. And there, we believe there are many bouldering accidents that happen every year, but we see none of them.
MacDonald says his publication is more qualitative than quantitative, where the data, the metric, and the numbers come secondary to the accounts that people offer. His hopes that our people will take into consideration the accidents published and try to learn from them to not repeat the mistakes made. And right now, despite all these obvious, gross limitations, Accidents in North American Climbing offers the most comprehensive data on climbing accidents. But they aren't even the only ones trying to understand how and why climbing accidents happen. You can take, for example,
Joe Forrester, MD, MSc. I'm a clinical instructor in surgery in the Division of Acute Care Surgery at Stanford University.
And Dr. Forrester published a paper last year that takes a close look at emergency rooms across the country and analyzes any patients that had climbing-related injuries.
I've been a longtime climber, and I've recognized over time that climbing has become increasingly popular, and wanted to get a sense of what sort of financial burden climbing industry places on both the individual patient who's injured as well as the healthcare system at large.
Dr. Forrester and his co-authors found that between 2010 and 2014, there was a steady increase, an upward trend of climbing-related injuries. He also said that the increase in injuries is still probably going up, but the data set was limited to that span. He plans on doing a deeper dive when more hospital data releases.
The 2016 databases are just starting to become available. And you know, next year, the 2017 databases will become available. So we do plan to look at these changes over time. It's just there's a little bit of a lag time between the year and then the time that the database is produced and then the time that we are able to analyze it.
And so there are a few limitations to that data as well. For one, it only looks at hospitalization records, which do not nearly account for every climbing injury in a given time span. Coupled with the slow turnover of the databases, it's really tricky to get a complete sense of climbing accidents. Not only that, it's hard to see if the severity of accidents shifts at all.
The number of climbing-related injuries may be slowly increasing, but the number of climbers are also increasing. The question is the severity of injury changing at all? And that's a harder question to answer with the data that we have so far.
However, Dr. Forrester says knowing more about accidents, injuries, and the burden involved will only make the sport safer. The understanding of how and why an accident happens will not only inform other climbers, but also gear manufacturers.
So we know so little about why climbing injuries happen, how they happen, because for a long time, it's been a relatively small, you know, portion of the population. And it still is, but it's growing. But the only way that we can hope to learn more about it is if we study it and study it rigorously. Until you identify that things are a problem, it's hard to justify spending the time or money to figure out ways to prevent those injuries. But if you look at, like, a simple example is automobile injuries, right? So until you realize, like, what the large, like, how much injury is associated with not wearing your seatbelt in a car, you can't make the argument that we should be wearing seatbelts in your car. So just like the seatbelt, you know, was probably one of the greatest public health prevention devices that was implemented in the last century. Like, similarly, there may be something for climbing that's along those lines. We just don't know about it because we haven't studied it.
And it's really important to keep climbing as safe as can be, not only for, you know, valuing human life, but because for a lot of people, climbing is paramount. Take, for example, Carolyn Morgan, who shared her story with us at the beginning of today's episode.
You know, so my dad and I climbed in City of Rocks and Castle Rocks every other weekend as I was growing up. So it was a very familiar area for me as well.
Her husband fell 80 feet and died because they didn't bring enough rope to climb the route they were climbing, and there was no knot on the end of the rope to stop it from completely running through the belay device.
2 days after Dan passed, my dad and I went over there and donated to Mountain Rescue there, who helped my husband get off the mountain. And it was just a somber, beautiful day. Just to be there and feel him close to me and know that everything was going to be okay. And I just, like I said before, you have to move forward. You can't dwell on the sadness. And I know I'll see him again because I do believe in a higher power. I don't think it's important to tell who made the mistakes or whose fault the accident was. It was nobody's fault. It was absolutely an accident. No good comes from dwelling on the bad. No good comes from that. So you just have to move on.
That's an accident that clearly could have been avoided. Carolyn was open to sharing, but most people who get hurt aren't. So if you're a veteran climber or have never climbed before and want to get into the sport or just know someone who does, it's important to remember that climbing is fundamentally dangerous, but it doesn't have to be. You can do a lot to reduce and mitigate any risk involved. You can make sure you and your partner have clear communication and strategies for when you don't.
Get out with somebody that's been trained, and for everybody at the group, something that I wish we would have done on the crag, regroup. Everyone check each other.
You can have someone always double check your knots.
How long is the route? Read the route.
Even doing something as simple as wearing a helmet. If you do get into an accident, report it, because that information goes much farther than you might think. Other people can learn and may not make the same mistakes. And understanding how and why accidents happen can make the sport even safer.
I mean, these are all really important things to do. So if you don't have the right gear, go home. Don't risk it.
I'd like to thank Andrew Shaw for creating our theme music, as well as Nate, Tom, Logan, Colleen, and Carolyn for sharing their stories with me. I'd also like to thank the Utah Climbers Facebook group for being such an amenable and friendly group of folks. You've been listening to In the Hive, a production of KCPW 88.3 FM Salt Lake Public Radio. You can check out podcasts of all of our local programs on kcpw.org. Also, why not follow us on Facebook and Twitter? You can get updates on when we air local programs like this show. I'm Tim Pierce, and we'll see you next time.